Open your Bibles with me this evening to the book of Esther in chapter number 6. Remember where we are? Queen, and I'm going to review some more, but just real quick. Queen Esther risked her life by going in uninvited to the inner court, hoping to intercede in the behalf of the Israelites and the genocide that was planned by Haman the Jew hater. King Ahasuerus or King Xerxes reaches out the golden scepter to her, showing her mercy, allowing her to enter into the throne room. And there he says, What is it? What is your petition? What do you desire from me? And she says, I want you to come and eat lunch. I'm going to have a banquet, and I want you to come, and I want you to bring Haman. And so they do. And then as they gather together, as Haman, Xerxes, and Esther eat together at the banquet, the king asks his queen again, what is it that you want? And she says, well, come back tomorrow. I'm going to fix you another banquet. And then at this banquet, I'll tell you what my desire, what my petition is. So chapter 6 that we'll read together takes place during that night in between Esther's first banquet and Esther's second banquet. And that's important. It's important that you get the placement of this. Sometimes biblical narratives move much faster than we think they do, but this time it'll take us 3 weeks to cover just a couple days. So it moves a little bit slower than maybe what we're accustomed to. But look how chapter 6 begins. On that night, the night of that first banquet, on that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there is nothing done for him. And the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai. You remember that? He went home and said, I got everything just like I wanted except Mordecai the Jew. I can't stand him. He won't bow. He won't reverence me. And all these things mean nothing as long as I got to look at Mordecai. And you remember his wife and his friends had said, well, you just need to build a gallows and have Mordecai hung on it. Well, we'll see. So he says, Haman says, to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, that is to the king, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse which the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Then the king said to Haman, make haste, or hurry, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew, that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. And then took Haman the apparel and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning, and having his head covered. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him. And while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains, and hasted to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther had prepared. This evening I would like to speak to you, and I'm just going to take my subject out of the events of verse 1 and how it sets things up for the entirety of the chapter. And I want to speak to you on a king's sleepless night. A king's sleepless night. Let me begin by asking a question I'm sure that I know the answer to. Have you ever had one of those days where nothing goes according to plan? Where you probably even the night before have thought, tomorrow I want to get this, this, and this done, and even get up in the morning, wake up in the morning and say, here's my goal for today. And you don't get 30 minutes into your day when everything derails. Monday was like that for me. I thought I had in mind what I was going to get done on Monday, which wasn't a whole lot. Mind you, I'm like Brother Gordon. I normally take at least a half a day off on Mondays, if not more. And I was going to make my normal Monday morning run to the bank and stop by the grocery store, but the Lord had different plans, is one way of saying it. Things just didn't. There was a rattling coming up from under the engine of the truck, and that got me a little bit alarmed. I said, what's going on? And opened the hood up, and the radiators were shaking. I don't know what happened to it while I was away. I drove the car last week to Tennessee. I'll just say that and move on. I'm just kidding. Just a little jab at my wife over here. But the radiator's loose. No big problem. I can take it and get it fixed. My phone quit working properly. I had to call Verizon. Just things just happened. I was committed to speak. I was invited to go and speak with a local group and talk to them about my trip to Israel. And I thought it was going to take 30 or 45 minutes, and it took 2 hours. So the whole thing, my day just completely derailed. But if you think you've had a bad day, you ought to just study the day that Haman had. You want to talk about a day that derailed and a day that did not go according to plan. Study this day in Haman's life. I promise you, things did not go as he had planned them. And you know who else was responsible for that? God Almighty was responsible for derailing all of his plans. And as much as we may hate him, guess who's responsible for derailing our plans? It is the same God in heaven. The queen has asked her husband Xerxes and Haman to return on the morrow to a second banquet that she has prepared for them. It is her intention, we believe, after feeding him this wonderful, scrumptious meal on the second day and allowing him to his belly to be full and get a little wine in his system, and that's just Bible, we'll get to it, that she's going to ask him to intercede in the behalf of her people. Haman had took advantage of the king's lazy attitude and lackadaisical nature and not investigating things properly, and had set in motion a chain of events that would lead to Jewish genocide, completely, utterly destroying the Jews. And last week the sermon title was "The Plot Thickens," and I wanted to try to build on that. The only thing I could come up with is the plot thickens even more. The plot gets even thicker, if you will. This night, in between Esther's first banquet and the second banquet, the king could not sleep that night. He had royal insomnia, if you will. The king, living there in Shushan, the palace, some of you may have heard of the movie Sleepless in Seattle, he was sleepless in Shushan. Sleepless in Shushan, the palace, he had a restless night and he couldn't sleep. And it may seem that that is an inconsequential thing, but it turns out to be a very important thing altogether. God often employs the most curious of means to accomplish His will. Sometimes God uses a talking donkey to make His will known. Sometimes a giant fish to swallow up a backslidden preacher. And even if He doesn't do things that are all that extravagant, He can cause flies or locusts or darkness to overrun the whole land of Egypt. Or He can simply cause a pagan king to have a sleepless night. Turns out old Xerxes' sleep number bed wasn't enough to give him a good night's rest. He wakes up in the middle of the night and he's restless. He can't sleep. And as a matter of fact, the Septuagint, and that is the early Greek version of the Old Testament, written somewhere between 200 and 300 B.C., a Greek version of the Old Testament, reads in verse 1, and it says, "The Lord withdrew sleep from the king." This Septuagint, when many times Jesus or New Testament writers or authors, when they would quote the Old Testament, they'd quote the Septuagint. So this is a quality and dependable translation. And it says, in verse 1, it reads that the Lord withdrew sleep from the king. So it wasn't just coincidence that the king could sleep that night. It was not coincidence at all. It was God who disturbed this pagan king's night of rest and caused him to awaken. And then more than that, if you would notice that he commands, verse 1, for them to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles. And that's just simply a record of events, a history book, if you will. In our Bibles, we have 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. And it is just simply a record of events, a historical account of the events that took place, a chronicle of what took place. And they had the same thing in the Persian Empire. Now, you need to understand, they kept records, meticulous records. Some of them have been discovered, meticulous records of events. What happenings, royal laws, battles, wars, you know, things that went on. They kept meticulous records of that. But of all the scrolls, or all the pages, if you will, that could have been or perhaps were read to the king that night, it just so happens that they read a very specific portion of the Chronicle. I imagine, and that's just all that it is, my speculation, I imagine it's early, early in the morning, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and the king can't sleep, and he says, "You know what put me to sleep? Somebody go get a book and read it to me, and that'll put me to sleep." And so in thinking that the slow reading of the Chronicles, you know, this book, I don't know if any of you ever try to read something, sometimes it'll put you to sleep, right? And he thinks this slow reading of the Chronicles is going to lull him to sleep. But instead, as he's reading, what does he come across? Verse 2, "And it was found written," or as they were reading to him, "it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers at the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus." So here is this servant stands reading. They come to this portion of the chronicle of the historical records that relates where Mordecai had disclosed an assassination plot on the king. And it's been just a little while, so just turn back with me. Let's look at it to Esther chapter 2. And let's just read this. It won't take but just a minute, but it'll bring your mind back to this very quickly. In Esther chapter 2, if you'll remember, Mordecai is by the city gate and he hears this plot to kill the king. Esther 2, verse 21. "In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those who kept the door," in other words, they were his security guards, men who were responsible for keeping him safe in his inner chamber while he slept at night, they were wroth, they were angry, and sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus or Xerxes. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it to Esther the queen. And Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now get this. Since the time that that actually happened, when these two men wanted to assassinate the king, 4 to 5 years has elapsed. 4 to 5 years has elapsed. During this time, Haman has come to power to be rise up right underneath the king himself. And so out of all the pages of history that could have been read to the sleepless king that night, it just so happens that they make their way to this portion of the Chronicles. This was not by accident. This was a divine appointment by the providence of God that not only would the king not be able to sleep that night, but out of all the records that would be read, they would read about something that happened 4 or 5 years ago. Can you not see the providence of God in that? The working of God in this? And he asked, the king says, after discovering, you know, that this assassination plot had been revealed by Mordecai. Look at verse 3. The king says, what honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai for this? What have we done to honor him? Again, let me just remind you, filthy or loyalty was vastly important to these kings. If you were honest and trustworthy and you revealed something like this, the king would always, almost always lavish reward upon you to buy your trust. There was always men trying to take over the king, the empire, to kill the king. And so if you were honest and you revealed a plot like that, the king wanted to show both to that individual and to all the public how much he appreciated that loyalty. So he would normally lavish great gifts upon someone like this. But we find out they didn't do anything for Mordecai. Nothing was done for Mordecai. 4 to 5 years have elapsed and still they haven't done anything for Mordecai. And if you're Mordecai, you're probably, and I don't want to put any words in his mouth or thoughts in his mind, but if you're Mordecai, and you've just revealed a plot that saved the life of the king, you're probably thinking, at the very least, a man could send me a thank you card. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if nothing else, he could buy me a $25 gift card to Walmart. I mean, if not, he could do something for me. But I think there's something to be said for the character of Mordecai, that he just keeps on doing his job. He gets up and still goes to the gate of the city. Even though he hasn't been honored for this great deed that he had done, he still went about his job. And I promise you, if you've been serving God any amount of time, you haven't received the honor that you should have received for something that you've done. You've done something for somebody. You've done something in the name of God, and you haven't received the honor for it. You haven't been rewarded for it like you should have. That's all right. Go on about your business. Do the work that God's called you to do. In His time, He'll reward you. Be like Mordecai in this. Don't be sour and say, well, if they're not going to, you know, Mordecai could have said, you know what, if he ain't going to put my name on the front page of the Shushan Today, then I just, you know, I ain't going to do nothing for him. No, don't be like that. Just go on about your job, doing what God's called you to do. And in His time, He'll reward you. You may do it secretly, but God will reward you openly. And so in this, we cannot look for the applause of men. Just do what is right before God. So anyway, the king on the sleepless night says, what's been done to reward him? His servants reply to him and say, they haven't done anything. The close of verse 3, there is nothing been done for him. And then all of a sudden, who is it that is standing in the outer court but Haman? not in the inner court, but in the outer court. I imagine again, Haman, he went home, you remember last week, with both bliss and bitterness. He was happy that he'd had the privilege of having this banquet, this meal with just the king and the queen. But he got all mad because Mordecai wouldn't bow to him, and he went home and pouted about it. And then his wife and his friends said, go build this gallows. I will imagine when they said, go build them gallows, and that Haman passed out the order to get them gallows built, he probably lay down and shut his eyes and went right off to sleep. He said, I'm going to get me a good night's rest. I'm going to get up early tomorrow morning, and I'm going to be there first thing in the morning. I'm going to talk to the king about getting rid of this joker named Mordecai. The early bird kills the Jew in his mind. I'm going to get up early, and I'm going to be there waiting on the king. And sure enough, the king says, what's been done for this man named Mordecai? They reply, nothing's been done for him. And in verse 4, the king looks out and he says, who's that in the court? And verse 4 says, now Haman was coming to the outer court of the king's house specifically to speak unto the king. This is why he got up early, and this is why he came, to speak to the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that that he had prepared for him. So amongst all of these things that are going on, here comes Haman, king sleepless, reading or having read to him. Here comes Haman early in the morning. And he is there, and the king asked in verse 5, look, and the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman stands in the court. And the king says, let him come in. And so Haman, verse 6, Haman comes in right before the king, and the king says, what should be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor? Now, just stop right here for a minute. The king does not say, what should we do for Mordecai? The king says, what should we do with the man whom the king delights to honor? Now, obviously, in the king's mind, he's thinking about Mordecai because nothing had been done to reward him for saving his life. But in Haman's mind, you know who Haman is thinking about. Haman is thinking, in fact, look at verse 6. Halfway, the second half of the verse. Now, Haman thought in his heart, the not-so-humble Haman thought, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? You know, there is no doubt Haman gets up early, goes in, he's called in before the king, and he's probably thinking, you know, the king's so happy I got up early this morning, he wants to brag on me. So the first thing the king says is, what should we do to the man that the king delights to honor? And Haman thinks, who else could he be talking about? He got to be talking about me. I mean, he couldn't be talking about anybody else, that's for sure. Obviously, Haman had not read the words of Solomon that says, pride goes before a fall. This was a prideful man. So in verses 7 through 9, Haman makes a list of rewards that lavishly should be bestowed on the man whom the king wants to honor, thinking that the king is speaking of none other than himself. Haman says, well, the first thing you need to do is you need to go get a royal robe. In fact, not just any royal robe, get one that the king himself has worn. Get that and put it on the man whom the king delights to honor. And then put that man on the king's very horse. Obviously, the king had this wonderful, powerful, strong, big horse that was his. And depending upon your reading of verse number 8, the royal crown, there would have been, and we've seen this in movies where they would decorate their horses, even put jewelry or crowns on the head of their animals to just show off their pomp and prestige. And so Haman says, put a royal crown on him, put the man on the king's horse, and then parade the man all around town. Show him off. And you know, Haman, he's just getting excited talking about this because he knows that's going to be me. And let them go before him. And look at the close of verse number 9. Thus shall it be done. And you're going to proclaim before him. You're supposed to ride him through the downtown Shushan. All around the area. And just proclaim loudly. This is what will be done for the man that the king delights to honor. And you want to talk about a man's day unraveling in a hurry. Guess what's about to happen? Old Haman's day is about to take a sudden twist that he did not expect. I can well imagine Haman saying, do this, this, and this. And Haman's probably standing there unbuttoning his shirt because he's getting ready to put the royal robe on. He's probably stretching his legs out a little bit so he can swing them up over the back of the king's stallion. Well, old Haman's about to get sorely disappointed. You ever heard the expression, their jaw hit the floor? I guarantee you, Haman's jaw hit the floor. Look at verse 10. Then the king said to Haman, make haste. In other words, hurry up. Don't just do it, but do it in a hurry. And you take the apparel and the horse, as you said. And he's sitting there thinking, yes, pour it on me, king. And do even so to Mordecai the Jew. This is one of the most ironic verses in all the Bible. There's an old expression that some older people like to say. They say, boy, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall. Well, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall in Shushan the palace and seen this. To say that this busted his balloon doesn't do enough justice to how he felt about this thing. You know Haman has to be thinking, what? I don't believe I heard you right, Mr. Xerxes. Could you say that again for me? To whom is this to be done? Why, to Mordecai the Jew. I came in here this morning with the intent of having this joker killed, and you want me to honor him? It was my plan to have him hanged, and now you want me to have him honored. I would love to have... Some of you young people won't know what this is. I'd love to have a Polaroid of Haman's face when the king said that, wouldn't you? It would be the very definition of the word shock. You think God was surprised by it? No, not one bit. That's the God we serve. There's the beauty of this. Several years ago, there was a little old silly movie that came out called While You Were Sleeping. Short end of the plot is some man falls and he's injured and he's out in a coma. He's asleep or unconscious in a coma for a period of time, and while he's asleep, a series of things happens in his life. Some girl claims to be his fiance who really isn't his fiance, and when he wakes up, he don't remember her, so they think he's got amnesia, and come to find out some other woman shows up and she's supposed to be the fiance. And while this man was asleep, his whole life unraveled. Well, while Mordecai was sleeping, guess what? The king was awake doing some reading or having some chronicles read to him. And while Mordecai was sleeping, while Haman was sleeping, his world was getting turned upside down. He awoke that morning with a plan in mind, and I promise you it did not go according to plan. So he says, the king says, I want you to go do this to Mordecai that sits in the king's gate. Listen to the close of verse 10. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. And then in verse 11, then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai. How do you think old Haman felt about that? You think he was happy doing that? I don't think one bit. I guarantee he looked like he'd been baptized in dill pickle juice. He was about as miserable as a Baptist when they passed the plate. He was tore up. It's okay to smile, even if my jokes are bad. He arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and Haman himself proclaimed before the people, here is Mordecai the Jew sitting on the back of the king's horse with the king's robe on. This man that he hates, this is his arch enemy, his nemesis. And Haman himself is parading Mordecai around the city, saying, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor." And I promise you one thing, he probably said this like he had gravel in his mouth. He was not happy about this. And I tell you something else. If I'm Mordecai sitting on that horse's back, I'd have a hard time keeping my mouth shut. I believe I'd have just sat down there to Haman and say, "Now say that last part again. I like to hear it when you say that. Will you say that again for me?" I mean, I'd have rubbed his nose in it. Here's this man that's passed this law, going to try to kill off all my people, and now all of a sudden he's walking me around town, parading me. Finally, after 4 or 5 years, I'm getting a little bit of what's coming to me, a little bit of that reward. I don't know what Mordecai might have done, but your preacher might have gotten the flesh a little bit and rubbed his nose in it the whole time. I'd have said, "Let's go around there one more time. Let's go around the block one more time. You want to?" I guarantee you I'd have given him a hard time about it. But things are now beginning to spiral out of control for poor Haman. And let me just throw this in. If you're a Jew reading this story, and even those practicing Jews today who still perform or celebrate Purim, we'll get into that at the close of the book, those, for years, it became an annual celebration that at the Feast of Purim, they would read this story again. And if you're a Jew, and this man has plotted to kill your people, and now his nemesis is sitting on the horseback, you're laughing when you read this part. You are laughing at Haman and hand this outcome. Verse 12, when this is over, notice the difference between these two men. Verse 12, "And Mordecai came again to the king's gate." Now Mordecai took off his royal robe, climbed off the back of the royal horse. And what did he do? He went on back to work. He went back to the king's gate. But not Haman. Haman hastened to his house, hurried up to his house, mourning and having his head covered. When this is over, Mordecai returns to the gate of the city to the calling, his job that he had. However, Haman runs home with his tail tucked between his legs, mourning and embarrassed. He's humiliated. Now stop and think about this. There were a number of people that had witnessed this anger and animosity as Mordecai and Haman butted heads. If you will remember, even some of them egged old Haman on and said, "How come we got to bow to you when Mordecai don't have to bow to you?" You know, they had egged this thing on. And now, this man, even though Haman's supposed to be the most powerful man in the empire, short of the king himself, he's parading around his archenemy. So this would have been humiliating for him. It wasn't just Mordecai who would have made sport. This would have been humiliating for Haman. All of those that knew about the animosity that existed between them, they would have been aware of this. And he goes home embarrassed, mourning, covers his face. You could just see him pouting like a petulant child as he makes his way home. Again, God's Word says to us, "Those who exalt themselves shall be humbled. And those who humble themselves will be exalted." There it is playing out true. God's Word ringing true. Haman had exalted himself, he got humbled. Mordecai had humbled himself, he was exalted. He goes home, verse 13, old Haman does. He tells his wife and his friends everything that befallen him. You can imagine he left the house one way and he come home a different way. He left the house on a high note. "I'm gonna have, before the day's over, I'm gonna have that Mordecai hung." And now he comes home and he's telling them, "You ain't gonna believe what happened today." Ever come home and tell your spouse, "You ain't gonna believe what happened today"? Well, I guarantee Haman had something to talk about that day. "You ain't gonna believe what happened to me today." And so he tells his wife and Zeresh and his, it says the wise men, but this is probably his friends, his counselors, his friends, what happened, and all of a sudden they change their tune in a hurry. It's really interesting if you'll note the difference between the close of chapter 5 and the close of chapter 6. at the close of chapter 5, they say, don't you worry about him. You go build a gallows. You get the king's permission. You hang Mordecai. Close of chapter number 6, all of a sudden they said, well, Haman, boy, we ain't got nothing for you. I don't know what to tell you now. You in trouble. You done started messing with Mordecai the Jew. You done for. His own wife and his friends now bail on him. You see the close of verse 13, of Mordecai, the seed of the Jews before whom thou hast begun to fall, and right they were, he had begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him. Not very good friends, are they? Not what you might call the most supportive wife there. And while they're talking, see verse 14, and while they were yet talking with him, there came the king's eunuchs, or chamberlains, and said to Haman, come on, it's time for that banquet that Esther's prepared. Can you not see things just completely unraveling for Haman? This big plot and plan he had to destroy the Jews and have Mordecai hanged, all of this now is falling to pieces. Faster and faster, and there's nothing he can do to stop it. And the day's not even over yet. It's just now coming on lunchtime. How futile is any human effort to thwart the will of God? In this chapter, and this is not only, but in this chapter, we can clearly note the silent sovereignty of God. We see the glorious providence of God at work in keeping a king up at night, and having those men read from just the right place in the Chronicles, to the king now wanting to honor Mordecai, to Haman walking in at just the right time, to the words that the king said, to the response of Haman and Mordecai. All we see God's hand at work. Mordecai probably began the day like he did any other day. Got up, went to the gate of the city, began doing what he was supposed to do. And then there comes his arch enemy with a royal robe in hand, leading a horse, and things suddenly change for him. Friends, we just simply have to remember that even when our days don't go like we think they are, there is a God in charge of things. I don't know how many of you may have heard, there was a chess prodigy, his name was Bobby Fischer. Tremendous chess player. I don't know anything about chess, can't play it, but they say one of the things that made him so great is that he could always see 7 or 8 moves ahead. Didn't matter what move you made, he was already 7 or 8 moves ahead of you, thinking about every contingency. And that's what made him so hard to beat. I have compared the book of Esther to like a chess match between God and Satan. Satan moving Haman and God responding with the king or with this. But let me tell you something about God. He sees the end from the beginning. He's not just 7 or 8 chess moves ahead. He knows the end from the beginning. And so it's not a matter of what may happen. It's already settled what will happen. God's people will be spared. There will be no slaughter of the Jews. And if it takes a sleepless night for a king and a reading of some Chronicles, and the hatred of a man named Haman for God to bring all of that about, God will use it. There's a couple old characters, we don't know anything about them except for they wanted to plot together to kill the king. Little did they know they were all part of God's big chess piece. Chess board, moving pieces around to accomplish His will. God's unseen providence is always at work in our lives. Though our paths may not always be easy, they may not always be pain-free. One day, all of Satan's wicked plans will unravel on him. And may I say this? One of these days, God will parade His Son through town and say, this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. And we'll fall down and worship and honor Him who is worthy. Christ is now sitting at the right hand of God, waiting until His enemies are made His footstool. And He'll come back and rule and reign. And we'll bow down before Him. I don't know that God will make Satan lead him around, but it don't matter. He's going to be leading the charge. our great captain and king. God bless you. I love you. It's time to quit.